The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Junk's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan, Team 980, 910 The Fan if you're listening in Richmond, VA, and Monumental Sports Network. We're brought to you by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. If you're looking to be the next five-star HVAC technician or plumber, it's very simple. You go to cropmetcalf.com, get more details on how you can join their team. Will Brinson joins us in about an hour. That's coming up at 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
He's a senior NFL writer for CBSSports.com. Always love talking to him. We wanted to dive into the current playoff chase in the NFC. And how concerned are you if you're a Commanders fan and you see the Commanders sitting in the 7 hole right now, but the Rams are gaining steam? They had a big win yesterday against Buffalo in just a wild shootout game in Los Angeles. They're now at 7-6. The Falcons, they're kind of going the other direction. They're leaking oil at this point. They look like they might be a playoff contender, but the most recent losses and Kirk Cousins, you know, downturn in play and propensity to throw picks has them kind of teetering. They're sitting at 6-7. As are the Cardinals, who dropped an important game yesterday to the Seahawks. How concerned are you, especially about the Rams' current surge? 800-636-1067. If you're a Commanders fan, to get a little bit worried about your standing.
Yeah, let's touch the people. 800-636-1067. So if you look at the Rams, they're not just chasing a wild card, they're chasing the division. Mm-hmm. And they do still play the Seahawks in week 18. They've already beaten the Seahawks. So if they beat the Seahawks in week 18, then they sweep them, and that could mean the division for the Rams. So that would put Seattle in play too. So if you look at the NFC West just in general, you've got obviously Seattle leading the division. You've got the Rams, who are pretty hot now that they're healthy. Just a game back. You've got the Cardinals, who've lost three straight, but Washington has the tiebreaker against the Cardinals.
Right.
And then the Niners, who, look, the Niners played well yesterday against a bad Bears team, but the Niners are on their fourth running back. Debo Samuel does nothing for them. Their offense is basically George Kittle right now. And
Juwan Jennings has been, pretty good, too.
Juwan Jennings has stepped up to be their leading receiver.
Yep.
But now that they're on their fourth running back, Patrick Taylor, and they got a tough schedule too, because they still play the Rams, they still play the Dolphins in Miami, and they still play the Lions. So I'm going to kind of toss them out.
I would be concerned about this Rams team though. Like when they're healthy and
they're
Nakua
legit,
and Cooper Kupp are both out on the field together,
they're legit.
They're dangerous, and Kyren Williams is just having another fantastic season. That guy seemingly scores a touchdown.
Yep.
Basically every week. Scored two more this past weekend. And they're starting to work in Blake Corum, the rookie, a little bit.
He looked pretty good yesterday.
Look, when, you know, Kyren Williams had 29 carries in the game yesterday. And he's
That's
a guy,
too many for him.
He's had some injury issues in the past, so I understand Sean McVay and that offensive staff wanting to work in a younger guy to try to spell him. Mm-hmm. He had 8 carries yesterday, averaged 4.3 yards per carry. So, you know, that rushing attack paired with Stafford and those two receivers, it's pretty dangerous.
I agree.
Now, you'd have to be worried about the defense that's allowing 42 to the Bills. Now, the Bills are, you know, one of the better offensive teams in the league.
Yeah, so I mean, Josh Allen is...
You can kind of give them a pass.
He's pretty damn good.
But that offense, especially if you're not going to sack Matthew Stafford, like he wasn't touched yesterday, 0 sacks in the game, didn't throw any picks, and he can just, you know, slice and dice you with those receivers, that's a pretty potent offense that you have to deal with.
The Rams still play. Now, the Rams have a short week, and they're going to play in San Francisco on Thursday night, which is an elimination game for San Francisco. Maybe not for the Rams, but certainly for San Francisco. And they still play the Cardinals and the Seahawks at home to close out the year. They got to sprinkle in the Jets on the road, and the Jets suck. So they should beat the Jets, but who knows? It's a road game.
So if you're a Commanders fan,
you're going coast to coast.
You're a huge Niners fan this upcoming Thursday night. You're rooting hard for Kyle Shanahan and company to upset the Rams.
Correct. The way I look at it is if Washington can just somehow get 2 wins minimum in the final 4, I think that's going to get them that 7th wild card, because I think Tampa's going to win the NFC South, considering how much better they're playing than Atlanta, and they've got a pretty dicey or easy schedule to close out the year as compared to the Falcons, who've lost 4 straight. Now, Drabby points out the Falcons have a really easy schedule in terms of opponents' records, because they play the Raiders, 2 wins. They play the Giants, 2 wins. They play Washington here, and then they play the Panthers, 3 wins. But they're playing so bad, they could lose to any of those teams. You would assume they're going to get right at some point, because the teams that they're playing are really horrible. But, you know, they could go on the road against the Raiders, and Cousins could play like butt, and they could lose that game. Giants could cause them problems just because the Giants have a good defense. So, and then, obviously, when they play Washington, that's going to be the head-to-head tiebreaker. I just think that if Washington gets 2 wins, starting with New Orleans, this is a big game Sunday. This New Orleans game is big.
It's a huge game.
Even though the Saints aren't great and they've only got 5 wins and they looked dicey yesterday offensively against a bad Giants offense, this is a big one because it's on the road. Now, Carr's not going to play in this game because he broke his hand. But still, it's a road game. You're coming off a bye. You have no idea how the Commanders are going to react to this. I would assume they're going to look really fresh. It's going to be a high-energy game for them, and I think they'll win. But this is a big one, considering all those other teams that are chasing them.
And the Saints, even though they lost their quarterback, they've won 3 of their past 4. So, like, getting rid of Dennis Allen and having that new coaching staff, that energy, it has helped them.
Yep.
They beat the Falcons at home by 3. They smashed the Browns, and they lost a game to the Rams. And then they just eked by the Giants yesterday. So, look, you lose your starting quarterback, you have to hand the keys over to Spencer Rattler or Jake Haener. I don't like your chances. Especially with Jaden Daniels, with a week of rest. If he had any lingering issues with the rib injury, those should be in the rearview mirror at this point.
And Lattimore.
He should be 100%.
Lattimore should be healthy for this game.
Yeah.
Which is kind of ironic, because that's who he came from. That's who he traded for. But the other thing you have to look at is conference records. Since the Commanders didn't play the Rams, well, so there's no head-to-head tiebreaker, but there is conference record tiebreaker, and the Rams have a 4-5 conference record, and the Commanders have a 5-3 conference record. So that's a pretty sizable lead in that tiebreaker. Cardinals, you have the head-to-head. Niners, like I said, I don't think they're going to be a factor. The Falcons have a 6-3 conference record, but you play them, so that would be the tiebreaker there. And then, of course, the Buccaneers have the tiebreaker on Washington, but I think the Bucs are going to win that division, which will put them out of play. So I just think if you get to 10 wins, that's going to be enough to get that 7th wild card.
800-636-1067 is the number. Are Commanders fans starting to get worried about the push from some of these other NFC teams that are jockeying for that last 7th spot in the NFC playoff picture? The Commanders coming off a 42-point performance against the Titans. I wouldn't expect them to have that sort of outburst against the Saints on the road, but hopefully this offense is able to score 28 to 30 points, and that should be enough to beat, let's be honest, it's an undermanned Saints team without their starting quarterback. Like, I'm sure that Dan Quinn and the coaching staff are going to stress to their guys, we should win this game anyway, even with Derek Carr starting. We definitely have to win it with either Rattler or Jake Haener under center.
Yeah, this would be a bad loss.
Like, if Alvin Kamara gets the ball 30 times and rushes for 150 yards and they win the game that way, mm-hmm. like, then you tip your cap to the Saints. That's kind of their only way that I see them being able to beat this Commanders team. But Kamara was completely held in check by the Giants this past weekend.
Giants held the Saints to 2.8 yards per carry.
Right.
But I think this is a game that you have to win, that you should win. If you lose to the Saints with a number two quarterback or number three quarterback, that's just a really bad loss. And then you absolutely put someone like the Rams in play or the Seahawks. So those are the two teams that I would think that you're kind of battling, the Seahawks and the Rams, mm-hmm. because you've got a pretty nice lead on the Falcons in terms of your record. You got two more wins than the Falcons, and they are just playing awful football right now. So I think the Seahawks and the Rams are the two teams that you're kind of fighting.
Let's go to Kevin in Waldorf, 800-636-1067, the MGM National Harbor listener lines. Are you getting concerned about some other teams trying to grab that number seven spot away from the Commanders as the Commanders were on a bye week? Kevin, you're on with the Junkies. Good morning.
Good morning, Junkies.
What's up?
First time caller.
Okay.
My supposition is still this. As the adult in the room, let's curb our enthusiasm. Let's get win nine
mm-hmm.
and let the chips fall where they may. Mm-hmm. But if we win nine games from four games, the process is working. The recalibration is working. The foundation is being laid. Should we be able to beat Atlanta? Sure. Like y'all were just saying, 10 wins should put you in there. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kevin.
I understand what you're saying, Kevin, that you know you get nine wins compared to four last year, and you overhaul the roster, and you got a rookie quarterback, new coaching staff. That's a great upswing in terms of your trajectory for the next few years. Mm-hmm. But I got to think right now, you're not just looking for nine wins and a positive upswing.
Right.
You're looking to make the playoffs.
Sure.
This is a team that should make the playoffs based on how they've played and who they're playing to finish out the
season.
Your
expectations get altered.
Correct.
When you have an 8-5 record heading into the bye week.
Yeah, I wouldn't be happy with nine wins and missing the playoffs based on how they've played so far.
No, these guys want 10-plus wins. I mean, I think they could win the season-closing game at the Cowboys, especially if the Cowboys are completely dead
sure.
and out of things. Like, I don't know how the next few weeks are going to play out. Or Dallas, mm-hmm. let me pull up their schedule.
Dallas is, you know, obviously playing well now, but I think when push comes to shove, and then, you know, they got a couple pieces back defensively, mm-hmm. which helps them.
Well,
but push comes to shove, I think that Washington, if the game meant something, Washington can beat Dallas, even though it's in Dallas.
They host the Bengals tonight on Monday Night Football.
Yep.
Then they're at the Panthers, and the Panthers have shown that they're not an easy out. They're going to battle you, and Bryce Young is playing better. Then they host the Bucs a little bit before Christmas on the 22nd. Mm-hmm. Then they close at the Eagles and then hosting the Commanders on January 5th.
All right, so they got five pretty tough outs to go.
Yeah.
And you would think that they would have to sweep that to get to the playoffs and get to 10 wins.
I still have a hard time buying, even though he led the Cowboys to a win here, I have a hard time buying into Cooper Rush getting this team into playoff position when they're sitting at 5-7 before tonight's game.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, their playoff chances are probably very slim.
Yeah.
In terms of the percentages in the Vegas books, probably under 10%. And that would mean Dallas would have won seven straight. I mean, they go out and sweep to get mm-hmm. to 10 wins. That's seven straight wins. I don't see it.
Yep. Let me check the Rams 49ers spread at this point. Is there Niners are laying 2.5.
Yeah, the game's in San Francisco.
Total's 48.5.
But again, the Rams are just totally different because of those two receivers.
Completely.
And they've got a good running back, and they've got a legit quarterback, well coached. They've got confidence. And I guarantee you, they're talking about winning the division.
Oh, yeah.
Right now. They're not talking about just getting a wild card.
Yeah, they want to win the NFC West.
But Seattle's hot, too, and they've won four straight.
Yep. All right, when we come back, we'll get into the big news of the day. Juan Soto signs with the New York Mets for record-breaking cash. Another national star signs elsewhere. We'll get into, will the Nats ever start spending like they used to? And we'll focus in on Juan Soto's new deal with the Mets next.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A late booking. Barry Zwerluga from the Washington Post will join us shortly to help us talk about the Juan Soto signing with the Mets and more.
The Juan Soto deal surprised me. Not that the Mets got him, but I was expecting something, because these are the reports you were hearing. You were hearing, you know, 550 to like 600 million, maybe 650. And when I saw the numbers, 15 years, 765 million, no deferrals, and it's got an opt-out after 5 years, I thought, OMG.
Yep.
I'm not surprised that Steve Cohen got him. I was just kind of surprised at the numbers. And, you know, this is the biggest contract in the history of sports.
All right, joining us to talk about that is Barry Zwerluga, sports columnist at the Washington Post. First, Barry, thanks for joining us on short notice. It is appreciated.
Yes, sir.
No problem. Happy to do it, guys.
Thank you very much.
So how taken aback were you by the numbers? Not really by the signing. We knew the Mets were one of the finalists to nab Juan Soto, but were you surprised that there was no deferred money and that the number reached $765 million?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be hard to say you weren't kind of blown away by that. That's an AAV of $51 million a year. And with Ohtani, when the numbers got really high, you're thinking, well, you're buying two players. You're buying a pitcher eventually and a hitter. This guy is, I mean, I believe in his talent, and I think he is the best free agent in a 20-year period in the non-Ohtani division. But he's going to be a DH pretty soon. So you're paying this guy $51 million a year to be, you know, one of the best hitters in the game, if not the best hitter in the game. We could have that debate another time. But, man, teach your kids to play baseball, because the money is guaranteed. There's no, you know, the opt-out will only be used if he thinks he can get more than the remainder of the deal. And you know, if you have an owner like Steve Cohen who literally does not care. I mean, this is almost like the equivalent of the Saudis and LIV Golf. Like, they don't care what the money is.
Right.
Like, he is breaking the game financially. And if you're in the division in the NL East, and you're trying to compete financially with the Mets, you're
dead.
You're going to have to find other ways. You're going to have to outthink, outsmart, because you're not going to outspend.
Yeah, and Barry, when you bring up the 15-year term, like, I'm guessing Steve Cohen he may have thought about it, but I guess it doesn't really affect him, or else he wouldn't put the deal out there. Like, the last 4 or 5 years of this deal, they're not going to look as great as obviously the first 8 to 10 when Juan Soto is in his prime. And we see this all the time when these guys get these 12, 13, 15-year deals. Like, those last 3 or 4 years especially, the play just tails off as they get older.
Yeah, it's
only natural that it happens.
Yeah, but I mean, if you win 2 or 3 World Series in the first 8 years, does that matter?
It's
you know,
worth it, yeah.
And I think, I mean, that's what he's banking on, for sure. And I think, you know, one thing that's different about Soto, and this has been true, you know, as he was heading into free agency, is he's very much like Harper, because he came up at 19, so free agency, he just turned 26 in October. The 15-year deal doesn't start when he's 30. It starts when he's 26, and that really, really, really matters. So his clock got ticking earlier. And I do think, Cakes, that, you know, Cohen's not doing this and just saying we're done. I mean, he's got an expensive player in Lindor at shortstop, but he can do, and I assume will do, other things. This is very much a day that's about Juan Soto and getting that record deal. But I think it's also a day that's about Steve Cohen and the Mets. And it's, you know, think about a Yankee hitting in front of Aaron Judge, having the season that he did, going to the World Series, and deciding, you know what, I'd rather play for the Mets, because there has to have been some sort of articulation from Cohen that this is how we're going to build a winner here. Because the Yankees were very, I don't know this myself, but from reports, were very close financially and in terms. So he has to have been able to articulate this, that we're just going to throw our weight around and we're going to win, you know, not one, not two, several World Series with you leading the way.
Yeah, that's a possibility. But maybe he and Scott Boras just said, all right, the Yankees deal is worth, you know, a few million dollars less per year. Maybe they didn't agree on this opt-out. Who knows? And maybe Boras and Soto just went, we're just going to go for the biggest deal.
Yeah, no, absolutely possible. And I mean, I would say absolutely probable for sure. And I also, you know, there's a lot of Boras conspiracy theorists and, you know, stuff that I think gets thrown around about him that I don't necessarily agree with. But I will say in this kind of situation, Scott knows the landscape. He knows the needs of every team, and he knows his client lists and where everybody would fit. So right now, by signing Juan Soto back to the Mets, Boras probably knows, okay, they're not going to bring Pete Alonso back, where he's trying to play this chess game that gets each of his clients the best deal, the most money. But he's also like thinking, well, if Alonso's not going back there, who needs a first baseman? And strategizing that way, I think that's a Boras conspiracy theory that I would buy, that each deal he does is not just fitting that player's needs. It's his client list and where are the potential landing spots that I can max out the other guys as well.
Now, when it comes to the Nats, I mean, the Nats are in an extremely difficult division, and it just got better. Okay, so now you're seeing Juan Soto, you know, 12 times a year as opposed to just seeing him a couple times a year when he was in the American League. But when you look at what the Nats have to do, because the Phillies are going to spend money, right? The Braves don't spend as much, but they've got great players, great farm system. Marlins, who knows? But now the Mets, you know that Cohen's going to spend a bunch of money. This just makes it tougher for the Nats to battle within the division. What do you think the Nats have to do, especially this offseason? They got to spend some money somewhere, and maybe it's a Pete Alonso type. I don't know if they'll go after Bregman because he's probably going to cost a lot of money, but they got to spend some money somewhere to show their fans, hey, we are for real. Now we're not just relying on our, you know, best prospects. We got to put some free agents out there.
I wrote that for this morning, that it's malpractice at this point not to spend something, because the core that they have is not getting paid anything. Their highest paid player is either going to be Luis García or Keibert Ruiz. Ruiz is already locked in because he signed a long-term deal, so I think he's $5.3 million or something like that. Okay. García, if his arbitration number could come in at like 5.5. So the point is, they're paying no veterans even $10 million for the year. This is the equivalent of having a quarterback on a rookie deal, having a core of guys that you believe in that are all either pre-arbitration or early in their arbitration years, so that they don't cost money. And to not surround that core with players that do cost something, and I'm not saying $765 million, but what would this roster look like if you went after a Corbin Burns or a Max Fried at the front of the rotation? What would it look like? And I'm not a big Alonso backer because I feel like he's probably going to decline.
Yeah.
But they need a first baseman. I don't think they need a third baseman because internally they think Brady House is going to come up this coming year at some point, and that will solve that position. They need first baseman DH power somewhere in there. Is that a Christian Walker from Arizona, who's not a flashy name but plays great defense and it would hit you 30 bombs? Like, where and how can they spend? Because I will be apoplectic if they go into next year with the 28th ranked payroll, because there's a time to do that, but that time has passed. Like, before the kids were ready, you don't go out just to spend. Now The kids are – Cruz is going to be there. Wood is going to be there. They've got to get Abrams back from whatever happened at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. They've got the players that don't cost money. Please, please, please surround them with some that do cost money so that you can have a chance to compete in the division that you just described.
So, Barry, this is obviously great news for the Mets to land Juan Soto. But, like, if you're a baseball fan in Detroit or Miami or Tampa Bay, I mean – You have no hopes of competing, at least salary-wise, with teams like those in the major markets, the Yankees, the Mets, the
Dodgers.
Red Sox, the Dodgers. Like what do those fans do? What's going to keep them coming out to the ballpark when they look at these teams with $350 million payrolls coming in, and they have payrolls at like $75 or $80
million? Yeah, it's hard. It's a little disheartening, and it gets back to that, you know, are there – there certainly are tiers in the sport, and is it tiers that you just feel like, you know, you can't, you're just a farm system for those handful of teams that can spend all that money. I do wonder what the end point for that right now, the Dodgers and the Mets, who are the financial behemoths in the sport. I mean, you know, the biggest deal before Soto was the world champion Dodgers signing Blake Snell to a 5 years, $182 million deal, I think it yep. was, just, you know, strengthening a strength because they have no weaknesses in L.A. I think, Cakes, you have to get to a position where the Tigers are right now, a competitive team built on players, as I previously described, in those 0 to 6 years pre-free agency deals, because you can manage a payroll and fill in not with the biggest, splashiest veterans, but fill in with veterans and have a situation where you're competitive for a stretch. But does that stretch end with your best players departing for one of four or five locations? It sure feels that way today, because if the Yankees can't compete or can't land one of their own, what does that say about the rest of the sport that can't compete with the Yankees? It's a weird feeling too. I think like the Mets have always been the second team in that town, obviously, mm-hmm. And they, you know, they were quirky and they lost all those games as an expansion team, and they won with the Doc Gooden and Daryl Strawberry teams in the 80s that were, you know, not underdogs, but not overdogs either. Is their identity just completely different this morning because they out-Yankeed the Yankees? That's just a weird feeling as a Met fan, I would think.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. Well, there's also pressure from within because, you know, they haven't been to a World Series in 10 years. They haven't won one in, what, since 86?
Since 86, yeah.
Right, so, I mean, there's certainly pressure for Cohen and that organization to get back quickly. But so getting back to the Nats, you mentioned some of those names that are still unsigned. I got to think that they're going to start trickling in soon here in the next couple weeks. But when do you think it'll happen for the Nats? If they do go out and sign, I don't know if it's going to be a Burns or a Bregman or Alonzo or Flaherty. I don't know, whoever it would be. Do you think it's going to happen in the next couple of days? Do you think it's going to take a couple weeks?
I will say this, like Mike Rizzo in his history, when he's had needs and he's had permission to go get people, he's aggressive about doing it. I mean, if you remember the offseason going into 2019, they signed Patrick Corbin before winter meetings even started. They traded for Yan Gomes before winter meetings started. Like they got on it fast. Mm-hmm. I'm not certain. Here's the problem I have, and I haven't done all the reporting I could on this, and I hope to do some this week, but I don't know what they're permitted to sign. Like, I don't know what their budget is, what they've been right. told their budget is. And so if they've been told, hey, no, you know, no players at X dollar amount, then do they really have to wait for the market to kind of fall out and come back to them and pick over the scrap heap? I certainly hope that's not what the case is, but I do know that, you know, the tenor over there over the course of the, you know, the latter part of the season and into the early part of the off season was, we got to sell tickets before we can really go out and pursue players, which I just argue is backwards. Please, please, please pursue players so that people have reason to buy tickets and you show us that not only has the Soto trade turned out to be the right thing and other trades have turned out to be the right thing, but now you're committed to winning in a way that you were pre-pandemic. We just haven't seen that yet, and therefore we don't know what the learners are going to do. And then throw in the idea that Ted Leonsis was going into the offseason saying, hey, we still want to make a competitive bid for that team. Like, where are we with that? I think there's tons and tons and tons of interesting questions about the Nats right now.
Joined by Barry's Verluga, sports columnist at the Washington Post. Let's hit on the Commanders before we have to run, Barry. So the vibes are good. Coming off the bye week, they snapped the losing streak. Now they get to go to New Orleans. So Jaden's basically making a faux homecoming back to where he started in college. Marshawn Lattimore should make his debut in a Commanders uniform against his former team. Oh, and you also get to face a backup quarterback because Derek Carr got injured in yesterday's game. So everything seems to be aligning coming out of the bye week for the Commanders.
Does it sound too good to be true, though?
Yeah, well, no, I don't think it does. Like, I think that was really a get-right game against Tennessee, and they got right in the emphatic fashion. I think that matters. Like, you know, when they were better than Carolina, when they were better than the Browns early in the season, they just took it to them and took care of business. And I think that was the concern coming out of the Cowboys game was like, wait a second, you're better than that team. How did you allow that to happen? So I think that was a correction for them as a group. I also think that if you know, they're not looking down the schedule, but I certainly can do that. Like, Atlanta looks like a mess now. Like, it seems like if they just do what they're supposed to do, take care of business against teams that don't look as good as them in at New Orleans and home to Atlanta. Now you're at 10 wins. You know, their position in the playoff seating right now is seventh, but it's a comfortable seventh because they're, you know, they're, what are they, 2 games? They're 8-5 and the next teams are 6-6. Like, it feels like things are pointed in the right direction in a way that they don't have to do anything exceptional or special. Just please go play the kind of football you played against Tennessee, and that should produce wins against certainly against New Orleans and Atlanta, I would say.
Well, the next best team, the Rams, got their 7th win, so they're 7-6.
Right, okay, yeah. That's right, because a little upset. But still, I do feel like...
I feel like two wins gets them in, yeah.
Yeah, and I also feel like we've never stood here in, you know, early to mid December and then like, oh, they're solidly in playoff position right now. They don't have to pull off any sort of crazy streak. Like, even the RG3 year, everybody remembers it as this wild, crazy ride that was like the most hope that the franchise has had in the past 20 or 30 years. And that's true, but it ended on a 7-game winning streak that they had to win the last game of the year against Dallas to clinch the division. Like, this is a much more kind of organized, structured, hey, we went, you know, we started 5-2, whatever it was. Like, it hasn't broken down. They've never been ahead of a season like this since those Super Bowl years. So it's just a different feeling. And it also feels like maybe that's sustainable year over year over year. Like, you're not 3-6 and we have to win 5 of our next 6 to get to put ourselves in position. They're ahead of the schedule, which is just strange around here.
Yeah.
Barry, thanks as always, man. Appreciate you hopping on short notice, man. Thanks again.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
Yep, that's at Barry's Verluga on Twitter. Go give him a follow. Sports columnist at the Washington Post. We'll take your calls next on the MGM National Harbor Listener Lines, 800-636-1067. In the wake of the massive Juan Soto deal to the Mets, are the Nats going to start spending again to try to keep pace with the Phillies, with the Mets in the NL East? We'll take your calls next. So we're taking your calls at 800-636-1067 on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. Are the Nats going to start increasing their payroll? Are they going to try to get back into, I don't know, top half of Major League Baseball payrolls? That might be a stretch. I mean, going back to their World Series year, 2019, they were at $161 million in payroll. Following year, that was 7th in the league. Following year, $159 million, 7th. The following year, 2021, $179 million, 4th in the major leagues.
Yeah.
This past year, they're at $103 million. That was like 25th or 26th in the league.
Yeah,
and I know that now, part of
now,
it has been
and now
that,
the top payrolls are in the high twos to low threes. So think about how much more teams are spending than when the Nats were spending 160, 170 and winning World Series.
And I think the specter of the sale of the team, like that played for a while. Like, oh, you know what? We're thinking about selling the team. We're going to keep costs low. We're not going to spend a bunch of money in the payroll. Like, it seems like the sale talks have stalled and or gone away. Like, that doesn't seem like it's a viable thing any longer. Like,
well, so, we would never know. You never know,
right?
Who they're talking to. We just don't know.
That's true, but you can't always.
Maybe they still are talking to team or to buyer, potential buyers, but the number just isn't where they want it to be yet. So let's just say Ted
could be.
Let's just say Ted was interested and wants to put an offer in, and we've heard that he has, but that number just wasn't good enough for the learners.
But it has to be frustrating for Mike Rizzo to be working under these constraints, especially when he sees what the Phillies are doing payroll-wise and then the Mets are doing in his division payroll-wise. Like, I mean,
Mike,
he wouldn't say it publicly, but I'm sure, like, behind closed doors, if you had a beer or a drink with him, he'd be like, man, I'm doing the best that I can with the limited resources that are given to me.
And I would say this about Mike. Mike could have gone to another team.
Sure.
He decided to sign again to be GM here, and he knows the challenges, especially with the teams he's got to face. So he could have gone to another team. You know, he could have gone out to the West Coast, and he chose to stay here. So it's a challenge, but we just don't know what the parameters are from the learner family on what he can spend. But they've got to spend something in free agency, because you can't go out an opening day in April this year with just prospects.
Well, I mean, as of right now, and obviously they're going to add pieces, the current commitments to the players in 2025 is $32 million.
Right.
So, I mean,
you got to spend.
You have to spend $75 million just to get you to where you were payroll-wise in 2024.
Correct.
Like, so they have to make some major outlays in free agency.
And I think
just
they
to
know
get
that.
Back to that number.
Look, the learners, they know that. You know, they don't want their stadium, you know, 20% filled
right
after, you know, May. But the question is, how much can Riz go out there and spend? Can he add two big-time free agents? Can he add, you know, one big-time free agent and then two middle-of-the-road guys? You know, he's got holes in the lineup. They need power. And you've seen all the names, and Barry just named a few of them. They got to go out and spend and get a couple of them.
All right, let's go to the MGM National Harbor Lister lines. Let's go to Michael in Sykesville. Michael, you're on with the Junkies. Good morning.
Good morning. So I think of spending, and I think of work smarter, not harder. Right, spend smarter, not more necessarily. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen Tampa do it. We saw Kansas City, Pittsburgh. Teams can effectively compete without dropping, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Granted, they do have a big shortfall of the minimum of where they were last year. I think the bigger concern is one of the world's worst sports owners, Ted Leonsis, going to buy the Nats. I'd rather avoid that. After watching the dumpster fire that is the Wizards the last 14 years and the complete underachievement of the Capitals with the greatest goal scorer ever, getting the only one cup under his tutelage, I don't want that guy anywhere near the Nats, period.
Okay, to defend Ted, like, he's built the Caps into a perennial playoff power since he's taken over. Now, would you like more than one Stanley Cup? Sure. But they did break through, and they won a Stanley Cup in 2018, and that team's almost always in the playoffs. Now, the Wizards, harder to defend.
Mm-hmm.
I applaud Ted for finally, like, just pressing the plunger and blowing the whole thing up and being willing to start over and try to go down that OKC route and try to rebuild them with a youth movement.
Yeah.
It's just, you just have to be patient with it and hope that it develops into what you're expecting it to be in 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
It's going to take some time.
And I would just say that in terms of comparing the Nats and not spending a ton of money and still competing with those big market teams, yes, it's possible. I mean, we've seen Tampa do it against teams like the Yankees and Boston, but it's just going to be very difficult in this division when you're battling the Phillies, Braves, and the Mets. It's going to be very difficult to compete against those teams if you're not spending. I'm not saying you're going to be spending $300 million a year. You're not. But you've got to increase that payroll big time.
Let's go to Brian in La Plata. Brian, you're on with the Junks. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. So I hate to say it to our fellow Nats fans, but they would not be spending any money this offseason. And they laid that foundation a couple weeks ago when they non-tendered Kyle Finnegan. Now, Finnegan regressed near the end of the season. But in order for them to non-tender him, essentially they were saying, we want to save about $1 million. Finnegan was a closer, and about four-fifths of the season, he was pitching like an all-star closer. And that's essentially just, I think they've already, they're punting this season. And you guys keep talking about how they have no money on the books. The big elephant in the room is they're still paying Strasburg. His salary doesn't go towards the salary cap because he's filed under retirement. But they still owe him about $25 million a year, and they deferred a lot of that money. So they owe him for about four or five seasons, all that money. And I'm telling you, I've called in before about this. That contract gave them PTSD, and I think that was an underlying issue on why the owners wanted to sell this team. They do not want to get into this MLB world of paying people $200 million for these contracts just to compete. And I'm telling you, they want to sell the team, and they want a blank slate for when they sell this team, which makes it much more easier to sell. Guys, we're the next Rays, we're the next Tigers, and we just have to go to down to Frederick Nats and scout those guys out, because that's going to be our team for the next 2-3 years. I just hate to say it.
All right, thanks, Brian. Appreciate the call.
You may be right.
I mean, they are kind of hanging out with the teams he mentioned, payroll-wise,
yes,
at least in last season.
Yeah.
Like, they're down with, like, the Reds and the Tigers and a few spots above, like, teams like the Marlins.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a low payroll number.
Oh, it's almost embarrassing.
I mean, it's sank about 65 to 70 million off of some of those numbers I was reading off in 19,
and if the main reason is because they just want to make it more attractive for a potential buyer, I get that. But if they're not, and they want people to come to the stadium outside of the first 20 games when you know fans are just jacked up that it's baseball season, you better spend and make this team close to an 80-win team, if not more, because if you don't, you're not going to get anybody to that stadium after May 1st.
Ian in Vienna, you got about 45 seconds. Good morning.
Morning. I agree with the previous caller. The Learners have quit on Washington. This faux rebuild was really cutting payroll left and right every turn. When you extend Rizzo and Davey despite them losing all the time, it just shows you where their priorities are. How can we bottom basement this team and just do it? It's sickening and maddening because they are one of the richest MLB ownership groups out there even today. This is a franchise that despite having a criminally negligent payroll is still in the upper third of payroll attendance cost. So they're not lowering anything. And I think when Ted passed, you look at Mark's age, he's not interested. And then the grandkids aren't even interested there. So it's like they're just waiting to sell, which won't happen till the Masson dispute, which is in legal perpetuity. So there is no optimism or path forward for this franchise. They will not spend, like your previous caller said, they're saving $1 million on Finnegan. Walk me through that decision. It makes no sense. So this is as hopeless a situation as we've ever seen. And when Ted passed, I think it completely blew open this entire situation.
Thank you, Ian. Appreciate the call. 800-636-1067 if you want to weigh in further on the Nats. And will they keep spending? Coming up next, Will Brinson, senior NFL writer for CBSSports.com. He'll join us next. We'll take a look through Week 14 and beyond in the NFL.